I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, welcome to Tell Me Tales. Thanks for tuning in again for another week. First up, thanks to all the people who hit me up with some positive feedback about around the Pat Smith interview last week. Obviously a bit out of my depth in that conversation, a world that I'm not really used to. And I think I said last week in an interview that I was a bit apprehensive to put out and not sure how some people would react to it. But yeah, really grateful for the people that took some time and had some positive words to say about that. So thank you very much. This week's conversation is with our man, Andy Ellison, part three. Andy and I kind of catch up pretty regularly just on the text, and it's always good to touch base with people regularly, but sometimes on the text you don't get so many details, and I like just getting on Skype with Andy once a month or once every 6 weeks and just seeing what he's up to. And he's been experiencing a few downs lately. He's got a bit of stuff going on, which he explains in this conversation, and we read pretty similar books as well, so it's always good to talk about some stuff we've learnt from some texts that we've been reading, and yeah, just giving you guys the opportunity to be a fly on the wall. I always think I get off Skype with Andy and I've learnt something about my life or learnt something that I can enforce, and probably gives me a good opportunity to check myself in a few ways. And I really hope you enjoy this chat. He gives his handles there if you want to outreach to him. He's going through some stuff at the moment, and I'm sure he'd appreciate your support, but he's tough and he's learning, and he'll come back a stronger man. Have a good Christmas if I don't hear from you before. Thanks for tuning in again. Cheers, guys. Rightio, welcome to Tell Me Your Tales. Andy Ellison's back the third time in, I think, about 10 months. I didn't even know who you were this time last year. I was just thinking about that before we started recording. And now we've had three podcast chats. How you going, mate?
Yeah, Brady, I'm really well. Good to be back.
Good to be back. What's been happening in the life of Andy Ellison?
Oh, well, a little bit. Kick us off.
I know little bits, but I don't know at all, and I wanted to talk to you and get you on the show again to get deep and go through like all the bits and pieces, all the nuts and bolts, I guess.
Yeah, okay. Well, since we last chatted, I've been on and off again with the rehab, getting different parts of my body right again, and mainly back issues have been, like the back spasms I had when I was in California, and then we got that to settle back down, and then I got about 3 or 4 weeks back into a cycle and was running pretty well, and thought I might be able to have a crack at Point of Pinnacle. So it was leading up just to that sort of middle of November, and then went from running a great session on the Saturday, 28K on the Sunday, feeling $1 million, and then recovery Monday was great, and then went out for a jog up to Taruna on the Tuesday, and then both the glutes started tightening up a little bit, and I thought, oh, that's a bit weird, just a bit of delayed onset from the weekend perhaps. And then I turned around at about 6K to come back home, back down the hill, and everything just started getting really bad, and I was like shuffling, and it I was a couple of k's from home, so I had no choice but to just jog home. And by the time I got home, the back on the left-hand side this time had spasmed up so bad I could hardly walk. So I spent the day on the couch on some Valium and try to get that to settle back down. And
have you had pain like that before, mate? Like, or is that something new for you?
No, that was similar to what I got in California, but this time it came on so suddenly, like, and it felt like out of nowhere. But on reflection, you know, it didn't come out of nowhere. I came back too quick. I upped the K's too much. I turned all the wrong dials. When you listen to like Magnus and Marcus talking about, and that Mike Smith guy talking about only turning one dial at a time, I turned two or three of them. You know, intensity, speed, distance, everything just got turned up a bit too quick.
And that resistance with those hill reps and stuff. Remember, you were smashing those. Like, I reckon they were some of your most impressive sessions I've ever seen you doing.
Yeah, and that felt quite comfortable, actually. But then, and I don't think that was a session that did it, but there was another one where I did one on the Saturday morning and I was a bit tired and it was a bit hot and windy and I was a bit cranky going into it, and so I was a little bit stressed going into it, and then the reps just didn't go well, and then I compounded that with another long run on the Sunday and then had another big week of training and just trying to hit paces instead of heart rate zones, and that's what threw the back out. But look, I came back from that and I was back running. We took it really cautiously this time. Had a bit of a change in philosophy with my running under a new coach and working with my strength coach and my physio, and we realized that stress levels and anticipation for me were a big part of my training load, and so we were monitoring that daily on training peaks. You know, how was my sleep? What were my stress levels like that day? What was my injury feeling like? All that kind of stuff. And so we were taking a very cautious approach. I think I did 25 Ks in the first week back, you know, all really gentle stuff, heart rate based stuff. And then it was maybe 40 or 50 K the next week and 75 K the next week. But while I was doing all that, nothing felt great. You know, I know when you come back and, you know, the first couple of weeks are always a little bit tough, but something just didn't feel right this time. Like, it was just really hard work and there was no release. You know, a lot of us run for the joy of running and the headspace that it gives us when we're out there. And I haven't had one of those runs for months now. You know, every day feels like a real battle. I shuffle out the door and I feel a bit tight through the back and feel like I'm hitting the ground really hard and heart rate's up and arousal levels are up, you know, just none of it feels really good.
Yeah, and, go back to that mental stuff though, mate, because I know when people say, you know, you're monitoring stress, everyone just thinks, well, how hard you're pushing yourself in reps and what the times are like, but not many people would often, I don't know, you know, talking to Julian and Brad, and three of us probably got better at it, like monitoring what else is happening in our lives before we worry about hitting the training schedule. But yeah, that's new to me, and it's talk to me about training peaks and how that all works on there.
Okay, so that came about from a chat with my physio, Matt Lancaster, who has worked with a lot of Athletics Australia teams and worked with the GB teams at the Olympics as well. And I think one of the mornings that I'd seen him, he'd just got off the phone, like a video chat, and they were talking about stress levels in male runners and weight levels and things like that, and not eating disorders, but, you know, guys not eating correctly and recovering properly and not sleeping properly and doing all those kind of things. And Matt knows me very well and knows that, you know, I can be a fairly emotional sort of fella, and he was thinking that these troughs that I seem to have seem to be related to stress and worry, as long as with my physical health and how my running's going. And so we were just trying to get a holistic view of not just how my injury felt or what load I was doing that day, but did I sleep well that night? Am I waking up feeling fresh, or am I feeling fatigued? And so on training peaks, it's really, you just click on it. It's called metrics. So you click on metrics and it gives you a drop down, and you can input all these things really easily. It takes you about 30 seconds. So you bump in, you go, rightio, I had 8 hours. Was that a good 8 hours of sleep, or was it an ordinary 8 hours of sleep? So you can pop all that in, and so you're getting a really big view of what it was like. So sleep hours, sleep quality, fatigue, you know, comes from none to extreme. Soreness, once again, from none to extreme. and then your stress, and then you put down yesterday's training. How did that go? Was it good? Was it average? Was it better than normal? Was it worse than normal? And then you put down an overall feeling of how you're feeling that day. So that could not be related to running at all, but how's your mind today? Like, are you worrying about work, or are you worrying about, you know, relationships or things like that? And then the last one is, I think, sickness. So are you feeling healthy? Mm. So it goes from extremely sick to – so within 30 seconds you can jot down, and that graphs on your training peaks. So that goes against your volume, you know, your and where your fatigue levels are, your chronic fitness level against your acute fitness level. And so we were using those metrics so we can look at it and go, rightio, well, watching my acute training load going up and measuring that against my chronic training load. And so as soon as my acute training load was getting above my chronic training load, so my general fitness versus my fatigue, then we were going to either back off and not do a session if it was planned that day, or not run at all, depending on how fatigued that acute training load was.
Yeah, right. It's interesting stuff, isn't it? Like, because it matters so much. I was just thinking about yesterday. We had our last day of school and had the end of year mass after school, and then our award ceremony, and just like this huge day at work. And then I wasn't working today, but just going to do my session, like, you just could feel tired and fit. Like, I got up at like 10 this morning, like slept for about 8 or 9 hours. Like, so sleep was a tick in the box, but it felt like I was so just busy, like, in good busy. Like, I don't think I was stressed or anything, just ticking things off, getting near the end of school year. But then my session just felt like just dull. Like, it was a bit, I don't know, just like, I can't really be bothered going to run some 66, 67, 400s and kind of warm. I think once you warm up, sometimes you get that feeling out of the way, but it can also be a bit deceiving, because then you warm up and you kind of click into gear and do the session, but then after the session you feel shocking again. So the warm up kind of prepares you for it, but you shouldn't probably be doing it in the first place.
Yeah, so you're having to get your arousal levels up to do the session. You know, that's what Sean Crichton was talking about, that he never had to do that. He never had to get himself, you know, pumped up for a session or use adrenaline in a session, because adrenaline is very fatiguing as well. You know, if you're having to use that a couple of times a week in your sessions, then that's going to have an effect as well. But if you're having to get, you know, super aroused just to get the session up, then, and if you're already tired, then that's going to accumulate, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And what he said about, like, not doing races and stuff at the, no, doing the training at your race pace. Like, I ran that last 400 at that B grade 5K in 61.8, I clocked it at. There's no way I could run a 400. Like, I did reps today in 67 and I only did four of them and they felt fast. And I reckon that adrenaline kicking in when you're racing, when you're trying to win a race, it just takes you to the next level.
Yep.
Yeah, it's unreal. Where do you find the time to kind of, I guess, look at all that stuff though, like you and your coach? Like, I know finding the time to look at your splits and your training program sometimes really tricky, and there's a lot of people who might just do, you know, 3 or 4 runs a week, and definitely, you know, looking into their training is probably hard enough compared to actually looking into all their sleep and how they're feeling and fatigue and all that.
Yeah, well, like I said, those metrics take 30 seconds to fill out. You might do it when you're having breakfast or something, instead of hopping on social media, you pop into Training Peaks and you literally press one button and it takes 30 seconds. So there's no problem there. With the looking at monitoring the chronic and the acute training load, you get that on your Running Peaks front page, or your Training Peaks front page, sorry. So you pop it open and it says today the fitness. So it's saying this is the fitness that you have to use for today. And it's measured there in a point value. So, you know, it might be 40 or 50, and then it's got your acute training load, which it calculates all for you, and that might be at 40. And then it gives you a form, depending on the differential between those two. It gives you a form rating. So what it means is that once you, when you're, say, at the moment, as because I've had, you know, well, I've been off for a week now. We'll get into that in a second. Mm. So my form is at like plus 13 at the moment.
Yeah.
So that might sound good, but that actually means I'm starting to detrain. When you're in a good training block, you want to be negative. You want to be sort of 0 to minus 15, or maybe even to minus 20 if you're in a really heavy block. And then what happens then when you go into your slight taper or whatever, that fatigue level drops really quick, like your acute training load drops really quick, whereas your fitness doesn't drop off that much, but your acute level will drop right down and your form will come up. And they say that you want to be racing at around 0 to +5 or something like that. That's where your form should be. So it calculates all that for you. So it doesn't really take any time because it's right in front of you.
Awesome. And it calculates all that stuff just going off your sleep and all that. Like it takes all that into account, not just what you're running.
We're mainly heart rate based, so you've got to be using your heart rate monitor. So yeah. It's getting an accurate reading of where your health's at. So it measures everything, you know, your resting, your average heart rate and your maximums and all that kind of stuff. But it takes all those metrics and then it charts it. So my coach would look at it maybe once a week, or if he knew he was monitoring me a little bit closely while we were coming back. So he was having a look most days and just going, right, yeah, well, that fatigue level, that acute training load is starting to creep up. So, you know, this is when we have a discussion, do we not do a session? But it didn't actually need to come to that because I was in Adelaide for the Pacific School Games looking after the Tassie primary school kids and, you know, just super long days, big long days on the feet, emotionally involved because you're looking after 50 primary school kids and looking after them all day and on your feet. And so I was really careful about my load over there, not trying to do too much. So some days I couldn't even run there. And then when I did do the sessions, I was quite careful. It was all zone-based, you know, upper end of zone 3 into zone 4. So, you know, sort of a little bit hard, but certainly not that hard. But when I was doing those, it just nothing felt right. Like I was getting them done but I felt heavy and I felt tight afterwards. Like as soon as I finished my session, I feel like I feel like I've been hit by a truck again. Like I'd start walking
just
and
burying yourself kind of thing.
Yeah, but not burying myself because the heart rates are all fairly controlled still, but the body just wasn't coping with it.
So you weren't burying yourself, but you felt like you'd buried yourself.
Oh, I just felt like I'd been in a race or something. And I was just like, oh, geez, that's no good. And then sitting on, you know, it's two flights from Tassie to Adelaide, so, you know, four flights in the space of 5 or 6 days, and, you know, not sleeping as well and getting the as good quality food as I'm used to, and all those kind of things were adding up. So I was very careful to manage all that and not try to do too much, and got back and just went through my normal sessions and. I'd booked in to see the GP just for a bit of a catch-up. She's a really great chick who worked in the Navy, so she's really pragmatic and really practical when looking at, you know, athletes and lifestyle and all that kind of stuff. And we were there chatting about something else, just having a bit of a general chat. And she said, oh, how's your groin and your hip and all that? And I was like, well, it's still really sore, actually. This is – like I've had this groin impingement near the psoas tendon there, and it's been going on since I was in Melbourne. And it was nothing that ever bothered me. Like when I used to see my osteo, I'd just say, oh, my right side's a little bit tight still. My range of motion was never that great on that right side. But there were other things going on, so I didn't really think about it too much. And then ever since I've been back here, it's been quite sore and quite restrictive. My range of motion on that side's not good, and it wakes me up during the night and all that kind of stuff. And I could be riding my bike along a road and I hit a bump and it'll aggravate my groin again. I was like, oh, so we were sitting there and she's like, oh, well, let's have a look at it again, because that probably should have healed itself by now considering the load I've been doing, which has been low.
Yeah, pretty minimal, yeah.
Pretty minimal, and considering what I'm, you know, it's not even half of what I used to do, and I'd had plenty of times where I hadn't been running or doing anything, and I've been in the gym and I've been having massage, doing all the normal one percenters, and she got me up on the table and she was like, yeah, that range is pretty awful, to be honest. And I'm like, yeah, it's actually really sore still, just trying to bend my knee across my body or do simple things like that. And she said, oh, well, just humour me. Let's get an MRI done, because we'd been talking about doing that for ages, and my strength coach and my masseuse had talked about, well, maybe you should have an MRI on that hip just to see what's going on. And my physio was pretty adamant. He was like, no, it'll settle. And it just hadn't. And I'm not sure if he's super experienced, but I'm just not sure if he just thought I was being a bit of a sook about it, because I had mentioned it a bit and, you know, I was just getting my work done still, but it still wasn't quite right. So that was on the Tuesday. Went and had a x-ray done first of the hip and the back, and then had my MRI done, and they're not fun. I don't know if you've had one of those before, but
no, I never had one. Touch wood. Hopefully I don't have to get one.
Yeah, they're not fun. I mean, you get put in a little cocoon, basically, and you get tied in there. And I had my feet tied together and my legs out straight, and just being in that position alone was putting so much stress on my hip and groin. I was in quite a bit of pain from a couple of minutes in, but you're in this like little coffin. So if you're claustrophobic, you pretty much couldn't have one done because you are just wrapped in and you're totally undercover, and you've got headphones on because it's super noisy, and they play some music, and the dude was pretty funny. He was like, "Oh, what do you want to listen to?" And I was like, "Don't care, mate." No. So he put some Coldplay on or something like that, and he said, "Oh, you'll be about 10 or 15 minutes." And I'm like, "Rightio. I'll tune out. I'll do some mindful stuff in there, you know, trying to breathe deep and just get through it so I don't feel too claustrophobic." And I was counting the songs, and it was like two songs, three songs, and I'm like, "Whoa, three songs, okay, that should be about 10, 15 minutes."
But do you think that's it, you're meant to be relaxing and doing some mindful stuff, but then you're focusing on the songs and you know they go for 4 minutes each, and do you know what I mean? Well, do you think you're already
quick
into that?
It's really hard to be mindful in there, man.
Yeah, I could imagine.
It's a pretty stressful little thing to do because I'm locked into this position where I can't move. It's very noisy. It's claustrophobic, and it was actually putting a heap of pain down my leg, from groin, quad, and I couldn't really tap out. I had an emergency button that you can press, but I thought, oh, if I tap out, I'm just going to have to go back in again. Yeah, so I just waited out. And he said 15 minutes, so three or four songs, I'll get it done. There was like four songs, five songs, six songs, seven songs, and I'm just thinking, oh, shit, what's going on?
Should have yelled out and told him to put on a podcast or something.
Oh, yeah, I should have done that.
Put on Tell Me Tales.
Yeah, he's finally pulled me out, and he goes, "Geez, sorry, mate, you're in there a while." And I'm like, "Jesus. What's going on?"
He's like, thinking the machine's broken or something? You're like, "Shit, I'm stuck in here."
I knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
Because he's going, "Shit, you got a bit going on." I'm like, "Oh, good." And he goes, "You got some pain in your left side and your back as well." I'm like, "Oh, yeah, but the groin's the main thing giving me problems." He's like, "Yeah, right. Okay, well."
But this guy's not meant to be telling you this, is he? Isn't this like meant to go to your GP?
Yeah. So then he goes, "Hey, you wanna hang around for a bit?" And I'm like, "Oh, why's that?" And he goes, "Oh, I reckon the specialist might want to have a chat here."
Yeah.
And I'm like, shit.
Crikey, yeah.
Okay. Goes, "Go wait in the waiting room. I'll send the doc out." So I wait out in there for 10 minutes. And he comes out, this big dude called Vinny, and he goes.
Never met him before?
No. He goes, "Go, mate, you want to come and have a chat?" And I'm like, "Yeah." So he's all upbeat. Brings me back into this room. They've still got Coldplay banging on, like super loud in there. And then this dude brings up all these MRI scans, and there is just white stuff everywhere. And he's like, "See all that white stuff?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Yeah, that's not good." And I'm like, great. I'm like, okay. So I've got Coldplay banging in my ear. I've got this dude who's all excited from these scans, and he's like, "There's so much stuff here, mate. This is amazing." And I'm like, and he goes, "Yeah, so we're looking over this, and, you know, you can see all these stress fractures here." And I'm like, "What?
Stresses?"
And I'm like, "What?" So it's like I'm in this really weird world, like loud music, strange dude getting excited, and he's talking about stress fractures. And I started just going a bit clammy because I was like, I've come in with a sore groin and now you're telling me stress fractures. And he's going, "Yeah, there's heaps of stuff going on." I said, "Mate, I just ran 17K this morning, like a session." And he's like, "What?" He's like, "You're running?" And I'm like, yeah, running a bit. And he's like, "Dude, you shouldn't be able to run." He's like, "I'm impressed." And I'm like, "Oh, great.
Show me your training peaks. What do you mean logging in for fatigue levels?"
He's like, "Oh, you shouldn't be able to run, mate." He said, "Right, I'll show you why." And he went through all these and he goes, "So I'm pretty confident you've got quite a number of stress fractures all over your sacral joint and through your back, and your hips are a mess. But I want to just do a CT, free of charge, but you want to hang around? We'll do a CAT scan." I'm like, "Okay." And he's all excited because he's got this new CAT scan machine that's like the best in Australia, low-dose radiation. And he's like, "Just want to confirm that they are fractures." And I'm like, "Great, let's do it." Go back in there and he's like, yeah, pretty confident. And he's like, "Right, so, all right, well, good luck." So he sends me off, and my GP was just meant to give me a call in the morning just to have a quick chat about it. I've come back in. I had a pretty good idea that shit wasn't good, so I went out and did my session that Thursday morning because I thought, oh, well, I'm pretty sore anyway. It's not going to get much worse. I might as well. I reckon I'm going to get canned from running for a while. So I went and did my last session.
I saw that on Strava. You're like, the last dance.
The last dance. So I got through it okay. And look, to be honest, the groin wasn't really troubling me. I was a bit stiff, but still got my session done. Came back home, and literally as I walked in the door, the phone was ringing. Picked it up, and it was the GP, but it wasn't the GP. It was just the reception. She's like, "Oh, the doctor would really like you to come in for a chat." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's not good news." So she said, "I can squeeze you in this morning." So I went straight in. I dropped everything, had a quick shower and something to eat, went straight back in. I was in there for about an hour talking about all the scans, and got my wife texting me because I was in there for an hour. She's going, "What's going on?" And I'm like, "Oh, it's not good." And she's like, "What are you talking about?" And she thought I had cancer. So and
because she works in the medical practice as well, like she'd be knowing exactly what's going on.
And I was in there for an hour just at the GP. She was freaking out. And I was like, "Oh, no, sorry. Didn't mean to alarm you, but it's not cancer. It just seems like everything else, to be honest." And, so I've got like CAM disorders in both my hips, which has all these bumps on them, which isn't crazy. But, you know, it could have been something that happened when I was younger or going through puberty, or I could have been born with it, but pretty much my hips don't work properly. And so they're grating every time I move. And then there's like a closing of the passage where it needs to flow. And so that's impinging. And that's why I'm presenting with all that groin pain. So that's good. That makes sense. And then I've got a PARS defect on the left-hand side at L5-S1. So there's like these two plates that should be shifting together. Instead of them shifting together, they've broken at some stage. And this could have happened a while back. Could have happened when I played soccer. Apparently they see it in soccer players and fast bowlers and things like that when the hip joint's moving around too much. So that means instead of them moving like on top of each other together as a unit, they move separately and bang against each other sometimes. And right in that point, there's these two nerve roots that run down my leg, so one down the outside and one down into my foot. And so that explains where I get all that nerve pain and why the muscles all tighten up to try to protect it all the time. So, and they don't, it doesn't happen all the time. So that's why I'm running pain free on that left side. And then other times it's like somebody's stuck a knife in my back. So that explains that. So that was pretty cool to get an explanation for that.
Yeah.
But then the big one was that everybody was worried about were these two sacral fractures. So somebody of my age and weight and that kind of thing shouldn't be getting fractures in their sacrum. So that's what everybody's been worried about. So since then I was told to stop running for probably 2 months or so. I was to stop doing anything, like minimal walking, not really allowed to ride my bike much for about 3 weeks, just to have like a metabolic reset to let my body just try to recover from the stress of all this. And then I was in with a sports doctor. So she was looking at everything, so having a bit of a holistic view, why is a 38-year-old guy getting stress fractures there?
Yeah. So in your hips, is the sacrum, that's where your hips are?
Oh, it's sort of in the back there, sort of joins everything together, in the middle of your back there. So, so they sent me off for a bone mineral density scan. So I had that maybe Tuesday night. So that was to measure the density of the minerals and calcium in my bones to check how strong my bones are. And I got the results for those straight away from the tech. She like said, "Oh, your hips are really good." So that was good. That's the first tick I've had. So the hips aren't the big problem, it doesn't seem. But the reason I got these sacral fractures, my spine, all the bones in my spine from, I think L1 down perhaps, are really, really bad. So I've got osteoporotic bones. So not quite osteoporosis, but pretty shit. So they measure you against people of your own age and similar height and weight and where your bone density should be. So my hips were smack bang where they should be, and my back was really, really low. So not as bad as in osteoporosis, which is just about incurable, but not great. So
did they give you like so many years behind expected where you're meant to be, or months, or like how do they
I haven't drilled into the details so far. They'll go to my sports doctor, who I catch up with on the 5th, and she'll be able to explain that fully. But it'll be basically, I'm pretty sure I'll be on some infusions, so I'll have to have some drips put in and have some some fluid or some strengthening agents put in, to, and that'll probably be a regular thing for a little while. I think I have to get retested in maybe 6 or 12 months, but apparently from anecdotal stuff that I've heard people talk about, that that can come back pretty quick.
Yeah.
Like you can, now that we know, they can medicate me for that and they can get the strength of my, my spine back up. So that's, I guess that's good news. So,
yeah, there'll be people yelling at their phones now, like, this guy's a vegan, he's not getting enough calcium, that's why he's got osteoporosis.
I said, oh no, this is nothing that's happened in the last 6 months. This has been there. I could have been born with it. You know, it could be hereditary. It's certainly nothing to do with my diet. And she said, you know, when I was with the sports doc, she said, you know, your diet's fine. You probably, you know, more about your diet than most people that walk through the doors, and you're more in tune with what's going in your body. So she wasn't concerned about a vegan diet whatsoever. This is something that's happened in the past. So,
yeah, well, you're lucky. I've actually looked into this because my mum's just got osteoporosis, and my grandmother as well. And when you look into it, it actually, the evidence about how some meats can impact calcium intake is actually worse than not having milk in the first place. Like, you can get calcium from other places and actually absorb it much better than having a meat-based diet and then trying to also have the calcium through milk.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was kind of not reassuring, but at least there's not much I could have done to avoid what's happening to me now. It's not because I was running too much, but obviously by having that weak bone density in my lower spine means that, you know, every time I hit the ground, I was doing damage, and that's where those fractures have most likely come from. So now we know that. Now I can, you know, hopefully get the spine all sorted out, and then I'm in with an orthopedic surgeon second week of Jan as well for an opinion about my hips, whether I should have those operated on or not.
Yeah, right. So our conversation last time was like, I remember saying something like, Andy Allison now knows more about himself. Like, he's identified these weaknesses, he's doing strength and conditioning stuff, but these weaknesses have just blown up. Like, we've actually really dug deep into what they are. And yeah, this is like real serious stuff that now you know about that you can address.
Yeah, which is good in a way. I mean, it was a massive shock. You know, you go in having an MRI because you're presenting with groin pain, and then to find out that your body's actually really sick, you know, pretty much was a real shock. So trying to come to terms with that was really hard, because it just blew me away. I didn't realize that I'd been running with such a – I mean, I knew things were uncomfortable, but I think one of the problems is my pain threshold's just too high, you know, and I think that's worked against me. I think normal people in my position would have just stopped, you know, stopped running and stopped exercising and just gone, nah, this is too hard. And, you know, I just seem to have just dug in and got through it. And I guess when your back's been sore for so long, you just sort of put up with it and just figure, well, this is just a different level of pain. So
it just becomes a new normal for you. Your back's, right. Your back's 5 out of 10. That's just normal, because it's like every day of the week. And it's that, you know, philosophy that you grind through it, and everyone else is getting up early and grinding away, and they've all got their own troubles. So why shouldn't I be doing the same thing?
Yeah, yeah, and you don't know what other people feel like, so you just assume this is what running feels like. It just it feels really hard. But maybe it's not meant to be quite this hard.
Yeah, but it's good that you got onto it and you're just like, okay, this shouldn't feel like this. I've ran for long enough to know that this isn't what running feels like.
Yeah, it feels different. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, what about that whole, how were you coping with the whole medical system? I know when I've had issues in the past, it's 1 minute or nowhere near to the extent that you've just listed off, but you find yourself waiting in some of these waiting rooms and you're looking around just thinking, what am I doing here? I'm fit as. Like, I banged out 17K this morning. You're looking around the waiting rooms and you're waiting for your name to be called because, yeah, I've had that bone density scan before as well. And you're like, am I really sick? Like, it's just a whole complete different world. And I think sometimes we live in our own circles and our own tribes, which we'll talk about later on, and we're not really sure what other people are going through until you enter that medical world.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, when I presented to the sports doc, she hadn't met me before, and she was really shocked as well. She can see, she said, I can see how nobody picked the sacral fractures, because you present really healthily. You know, I was walking pretty well that day. It was funny. It was so ironic. The day that I had the scans was the best I've felt in months. You know, I'd felt like, oh, maybe I've turned the corner. Maybe I'm starting to adapt and it's not going to hurt quite as much. And then you find out that, oh, no, actually your back's pretty stuffed. And you're going to have quite a couple of months off. But, yeah, it was a bit of a shock being I've been in so many doctor's appointments over the last week and a half, you know, more than I would normally have in a lifetime, I think. And, yeah, it's not a whole lot of fun being on that side of it. But I think I'm coming to terms with it now. I was really upset that Thursday. Like, I just sat in the car and had a bit of a cry because I was like – and not the fact that I knew I wasn't going to run for a while. That wasn't it. It was the fact that my body's been such a mess and I either haven't been in tune with it or enough or, you know, I've just put up with it. And, you know, it's just that being it's like I'm not physically sick, but my body is, and that was a real shock to me because I try to look after myself so well, and it's like I've let myself down.
Yeah, but you haven't though. Like it's hard kind of headspace to be in thinking that you've let yourself down when really you've had all these issues going on, and it's just now about addressing them.
Yep. So now we've got I'm so lucky. I've got so many great people around me down here. Like on the Friday, my physio Matt called me up and just. I'd sent him the report and he just broke it all down for me. He said, look, you can ignore half of this, you know, because the report went over 3 pages. Like it was huge. Like, and it was just soul destroying to read so much going wrong with me. But he broke it down. He's like, you don't need to worry about so many of these things. They've been there since you were born probably or since you're in puberty. So you can manage those and you put up with them for now and you can get through and you've still been able to achieve stuff. So don't even think about it. The only thing he was worried about again was the sacral fractures. And he's like, we've just got to let those rest, find out why they happened, and then the other stuff we'll take care of as we need to.
Back to the puberty thing, I remember my GP asked a lot of questions about, like, were you small during secondary school and did you go through puberty late and all those kind of things? Like, did your GP – yeah, because I know, like, I went to a secondary school with probably 200 kids each year level, and I remember being the second smallest kid. And I remember, I didn't hit puberty, like, wow. Like, year 7, 8, 9, I was still this little guy. It looked like he should have been in grade 6.
Yeah, I was pretty tiny up until about grade 10. I mean, I'm not big now, but, you know, yeah, I had a big growth spurt in late grade 10. I think I was pretty small. I was smaller than all my sisters until I was in about grade 10, and now, you know, they come up to my shoulder, so... there could have been that, but it could have been a hormonal thing. I mean, they're checking for that all with my bloods and everything. It could have been a thyroid issue or something like that, but I think that's pretty – I think we've checked that earlier in the year when I had all my bloods done regularly, that there were no hormonal issues there at all. So,
thyroid meds could be like Oregon Project.
Yeah, I reckon I'm going to be all good. I reckon I've got a thyroid issue, 100%.
And asthma.
What else?
Tick the box.
Yeah.
What about your headspace through all this, though? Like, that must have been... And I know you said before you didn't mind that you couldn't run. I don't know if that was me, though. Like, running's such a huge part of our lives, and it's just... I don't know. It's got to keep us sane in a way, maybe because you've come from the bike background as well. Like, you know you can jump on the bike and get that same release, but not being able to run, maybe not so much competing, but just not being able to go for jogs every day would really change my outlook on life.
Oh, no, that scares the hell out of me as well, but... The main emotion was not about the running. It was just that my body's not right and, you know, I could be sick. Like when he started talking about having osteoporosis, which is pretty incurable at 38, and I thought I was healthy, and that's what started freaking me out a bit. Not the fact that I wasn't going to be able to run again. I mean, yeah, it scares me to think about it, but from what everybody I've talked to, all the health professionals, nobody's ruled it out yet. Nobody's ruled out not being able to come back to running, but... At this stage, I still don't know, to be honest. But, yeah, I do have the bike that I can fall back on, and I've been doing yoga, so they told me I'm allowed to do yoga. That's about the only physical activity, so I've just thrown myself into that. I've done 3 sessions of that since I got the diagnosis, so I'll do that. I'll keep doing my headspace stuff. I'm allowed to really gently ride to work as long as I don't get my heart rate up at all. I'm allowed to do that a couple of times a week. I'm not really allowed to walk, which is a bit of a bugger, so I'm not allowed to walk my dog or anything like that because they just want me to rest up my feet. And then in the new year, I'm allowed to start swimming. So I've got another mate who's a little bit injured at the moment, so we'll go jump in the pool and cut some laps. And then there's a big riding community down here. A lot of my mates ride anyway, so I'll reluctantly get back on the bike for a little bit as well and do some cross training. So, you know, I'll get through the next couple of months and then I'll see how we are.
And then they scan again, like they go right.
Yeah, I'll do another CT in about 6 weeks and see how the fractures have healed up.
See how it's mended. Hey, you just brought up a good thing then about the community, and I wanted to talk to you because last time we spoke, we talked about reading Sebastian Junger's book about tribes, and it's kind of ticking boxes a bit what you're talking about having people close to you who have the same views and can band around together to help the common good a bit. You enjoy that book?
Yeah, it was good. It was a bit short. It was more like an essay, wasn't it? It was only 130-odd pages or something, and I was reading a little bit more about it today, and some guy was talking about how he loved all the concepts of it, but he wanted him to go on. Like, he started, you know, really delving into it and then just cut it off. So I found it really interesting, but, yeah, I'd love to know more about it, to be honest.
Same here. I listen to two of his podcasts with Joe Rogan, and I'm not sure if you listen to any of Joe's podcasts, but they go for, like, 2-3 hours, and then hearing those two interviews that went for, you know, 4 or 5 hours in length, and then reading the book, I felt like I'd already read the book just because he speaks anecdotally about all the stuff that's already in the book. And, yeah, 130 pages, pretty big text. I picked it up last Saturday, and I think I finished it in kind of 3 sittings. It was pretty easy to finish off.
Yeah, but what he's talking about is quite interesting, isn't it? We were texting about this earlier today about tribes and smaller communities and belonging and things like that. And now, I don't know if it was in the book or if it was on one of the podcasts he did, but he talked about, you know, how anonymous so many of us are in bigger cities, and how, you know, he was talking about the simple things about, like, cutting people off in traffic and you know, not respecting other people because you don't have to because you're anonymous. And, you know, so people live in their own little worlds, and you can go through your whole day without actually having to communicate fully with people, or, you know, because we don't talk to our neighbours so much anymore because we have our jobs and now we all commute in cars or however we get to work, and we have social media, so we're communicating that way. You know, we don't spend as much time together anymore, and we're not as, you know, directly you know, related to our community. And he was saying how that's a bit of a problem in society now.
Yeah, massive problem. And he kind of said that you can be living in a town of, like, or a city of, like, 15, 20 million people, like some of those big cities in the United States, and literally have deep conversations with people during the day, or not feel like you're contributing to a community at all. And it made me feel so lucky that I live in a small town, and that you have, you know, the parkrun community or the triathlon community or the community living in a respite community that we raise money for, and, like, just these little hubs that are so easier to develop when you're living in small towns.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, you are living, you've still got it. You are still living in a tribe, aren't you?
Yeah, in a way. Like, yeah, Chukumoam is about 20,000, but I think that's what, after reading the book, I was just kind of ticking things off in my brain, thinking, yeah, this is what I get my kicks out of, in a way, and I've never been able to explain it before, like banding together to, you know, do something for the common good rather than yourself. Whereas if you're in a big city, and there are, you know, community groups and stuff in big cities, don't get me wrong, and I think people are doing some amazing things in big cities, but it's so much, there's so many people in big cities not involved at all in a tribe in any way.
Yeah, and you can go through your whole life, you know, you can go through every day without having to be accountable to anybody. Whereas, you know, there are consequences, and that's what he talked about with the tribes, didn't he? He talked about how there were consequences when we lived in tribes because, you know, everybody was about the common good. If they were hunter-gatherers, and they had to go out and, you know, you had your hunters and then you had your gatherers, and so the people who were going and getting food or the people who were hunting animals and bringing back food, it was for everyone because everybody had a role. And if you did something, or you say you stole something from your tribe, there would be dire consequences. It was either, you know, you were kicked out of the tribe, or
you were killed, they
killed you. Exactly right. And it showed that everybody just respected everybody more, though, because they all played a role in society in their own tribe. And now we don't have to, you know, you can drive to work. And like that point about cutting people off in traffic, you know, something that Moose on the Loose would probably get stuck into, I reckon, if he had to commute in traffic, that, you know, people cut people off all the time and talk on phones because there's nobody there to tell them not to, you know. And if you cut me off in traffic and you know, pull out in front of me and you can just drive off because we're never going to have an interaction. So it doesn't matter if you piss somebody else off.
And he kind of said as well, like, this is what really stood out to me, that the more we've spent living life like this as society, the higher all our mental illness has got. Like, it's just, you know, we weren't designed to live the way a lot of people are living at the moment.
Yeah, that was his, when he was talking about the American Indians or the Native Americans, wasn't he?
Yeah.
How, like, what was it, the 17th? Like, around the 17th, 18th, 19th century? Like, when they would go into these tribes, like, they'd be kidnapped. And then when they were able to be returned to their normal, like, white settlements, that nobody wanted to go.
Yeah, they were.
Nobody wanted to leave these tribes.
We'll just live here, yeah.
Exactly right, because they appreciated being... You know, they were in the community and they were needed and they felt like they had purpose. Whereas in our life, you know, you can go through life without having to be reliant on anybody else or being responsible to anybody else. So I think that's why you do so well with all your community stuff. And, you know, that's why I'm trying to do more of that, like going away with the Tassie team to the PSGs, you know, that's totally voluntary. We don't get paid for it, you know, and every other state there are being manned by teachers who are getting paid for it. And a lot of the levies that we pay are to bring in relief teachers, you know, to cover the teachers who are looking after these other kids, whereas the Tassie is all just people who love the sport and love giving a little bit back. And so we're all on volunteer base. And you know, it was just great being able to give something back and be responsible and you know, doing something for someone else, yeah.
But even just coming on this podcast, mate, like you've given up about 5 hours after this chat tonight just to volunteer your time, just to have a chat, and, you know, a couple of thousand people are going to download it. It's going to get them through their Sunday long run, hopefully, this week. And it's just, I don't know, it just makes sense. Like, it's not rocket science. And one of the main points that I found as well that... Oh, when they were kind of talking about people wanting to return to war. So these vets would come back from war and they're like, they come back and they, you know, post-traumatic, what's it called?
Stress disorder.
PTSD. Would
mm-hmm.
go through the roof. And then a lot of them would say like they were happiest when they were at war, sleeping, you know, body to body and being alert because they had a role and they had a purpose in their life. And now they come back and, you know, they might finish off in the army and they're 32 and they've still got, you know, 50 years ahead of them to live if they live to 80. And then it's like your purpose is gone. You do not have a purpose throughout your life. And it's just you want to be back in that environment where the war's happening and you've got, yeah, a tribe to protect.
Yeah, they were saying that the people who were recovering quickest from that, because they're saying there's two forms of PTSD. There's short-term and long-term, which is chronic. So short-term is like the guys who are actually on the front line in actual combat and seeing death and all that kind of stuff. They were the people who were bouncing back quicker. It was really odd because they had their little tribes, I guess, and their groups support around them. And the people who were not on the front lines were the people most affected because they would just come home and people would go, oh, well, you went on the front line. What did you see? You know, just get on with it, you know. And so they weren't feeling valued and they'd come back into life in America, and that's what they're saying. It's in America that the highest rates of this are because they just don't have a system to infiltrate these people back into regular everyday life, and you know they can't get over it.
Give them a pension, and it's like, yeah, you're set for life. You're on this army pension. Thanks for representing the country. Cheers. But what they want is to be back and having responsibility and fighting for the tribe in some way.
And they want purpose, and that goes back to that other book that we were talking about, the Blue Zones, the longevity of people, because they had purpose in their life. You know, even though they were 100 years old, they still had to get up and they would help, you know, with breakfast for their family, or they'd look after their great grandchildren, or they'd have their social groups that they'd go and meet for a drink or a walk. And we all need purpose, don't we?
Yeah, 100%. What about that stuff about 9/11, like how the mental illness and stuff dropped after 9/11 because the United States kind of had to band together because it was us against them now, not of us all on their kind of, well, not all of them on their same road going forward, or different roads going forward.
Yeah, but that's pretty sad, isn't it, that we have to rely on war to bring us together?
Yeah, rely on like a massive attack on your country to realise how good your country is and you should be working together. I heard an interesting podcast today when I was warming up and warming down. I was listening to Joe Rogan podcast, and they were talking about would world peace like ever, would it ever happen? And they were kind of saying the only way for it to ever happen would be if we were invaded by like aliens or something, because everyone would just be like, right, doesn't matter what country you're from, we're all together, we're Team Earth now, and we're going to band together. Day. Yeah, that kind of stuff. And I'm like, you're probably right. Like, it's, you see it when, you know, countries have natural disasters, and he spoke about that in the book as well. Like, people just come together, and, you know, you don't mind if someone cuts you off in traffic if you've just experienced a massive catastrophe in your hometown, because it's like, it's all right, mate, I understand it.
Let's, just roll with
we're
it.
We're all on the same team here. You're letting people in at the supermarket. Yeah. Like, all those little things are just not worth getting worked up for, because you've experienced some major, major troubles. Yeah, it's an interesting one. Good book, though. I recommend it. Like, I love easy reads, like stuff I can drop in a couple of days. It just makes the page turn a whole lot better.
It would have liked to have been a bit longer, but, yeah, that's my only criticism of it, absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. Mind you,
but I've heard him talk on a few podcasts, and he's great to listen to as well. Yeah.
He is, yeah. I mean,
was it him that has – did we talk about him last time, about how he doesn't have a cell phone or doesn't have a smartphone?
No, I didn't. I don't think we spoke about it, but, yeah, he definitely started that podcast talking about how he's still got the old flip phone. It's like, I take calls and text messages and that's it.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to be able to be, you know, contacted 24/7 or be involved or – and he's talking about bullying in school, and because they were talking about the rates of anxiety in adolescence now, and how it's just skyrocketing. And he was saying he attributes it to social media or smartphones, because he used the example, I think he's in his 50s, when he was at primary school or high school or the equivalent there, say if he was getting bullied that day, then he'd go home at 3 o'clock, and there were no phones, there were no smartphones, there was no internet, there were no Facebook sites, there were nothing like that. So he couldn't get bullied from 3 p.m. that afternoon once he was home until 8 or 9 a.m. the next day. So he had, you know, 12 or 15 hours where nobody could touch him. And so, you know, whereas constantly now kids can get bullied 24/7. And so, you know, that he reckons that's a massive cause of the anxiety in adolescence now.
Yeah, it's even, I'm not getting bullied online or anything like that, but I sometimes find myself, I'll wake up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. We don't have a clock in our bedroom. Like, we've made the effort to have no clocks and no lights and all those kind of things, but I'll roll over and just go, oh, I'll just check my phone. If I've got to get up in 20 minutes or 5 hours, what is it? And then notifications will pop up, and then you're like half aware, like, and you're just like, I don't want to read this, I just want to see the time, but you just see your phone's loaded with all these notifications. I've got most of them turned off, but Facebook Messenger, that's probably the next one I've got to get rid of, just to make sure, because then you're trying to get back to sleep and you're like, oh, what did Brad say to Julian at 9:50 last night when I was asleep at 9:30? Then you've missed it. And yeah, it's a strange little thing how it can impact you. Even, you know, it's all positive stuff that people are talking about. As I said, not getting bullied, but it's still having an impact on your headspace in one way or another.
Oh, totally. It's controlling it, isn't it? There's plenty of other things you could be doing, isn't there?
Yeah, I reckon that's the way. We're all going to go back to the old flip phones and just, yeah, I don't know. Is it going to happen? The smart people will.
Yep, I've got a mate who is going in between at the moment. He's a pretty interesting fella, Gator. He's bought a brick phone, just a standard phone, talk and text, and he keeps going in and out. So he's not quite sure, because he runs his own business, and so it's quite challenging, you know. In some respects, he needs some of the convenience that the smartphones can bring, but then you just fall back into the trap of getting stuck into social media and wasting time on there. And so, you know, do we just take the good out of it, and can we just take the good out of it and ignore the rest and leave it there, or our behaviors so that we can't avoid it? You know, we can't help opening that app and scrolling and refreshing and seeing if anything's changed. You know, is it just part of us now?
And the longer we do it, the more it's going to be part of us.
Yeah.
Like, it's a hard road back to, because I just think of, like, you know, Strava's on my phone and Instagram and, like, emails, and, like, it's all there. Like, if I was just to go back to talk and text, it's like I just have to walk around with my laptop or something, maybe.
Yeah, well, you could do it.
Yeah.
Couldn't you?
I definitely could do it. I think actually being on school holidays now is a good time to try. It's like, all right, no one's ringing you for work. Like, that's probably the most urgent stuff. If anyone's going to call, it's work stuff. Everything else can probably just go by. Like, if I miss a text message or miss a Facebook notification, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, but then you're coming up to race weekend and, you know, this is when, I mean, most of the stuff you do, or nearly everything you do is positive, but, you know, there's still a negative connotation to it, isn't it? You're losing so much of your day by being on these sites, but you're coming up to a race and you want to have that positivity around you, don't you? You want these messages from your mates and people like that wishing you luck for the race, or if you have a good one on Saturday night, you know, you want the congratulations and all that kind of stuff.
And scrolling through like the live feed, like comments and stuff. I remember doing that before I left Melbourne, like warmed down, watched the A grade race, got back to my car, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to drive for the next 3 hours. I don't want to do this when I get home at 2 a.m. I'm just going to, you know, this is going to be my endorphin hit again to see what people are saying and what kind of rubbish people are talking to get me home. And yeah, you're right. Like a lot of that positive stuff can build you up.
But shouldn't we have some of that in our life as well, though? You know, I mean, you know, because we live in, like, you live in your community, but not all your mates are in your community, aren't they? You've got so many friends and things like that who are not within touching distance, and so you can't have those regular catch-ups that you could. And so social media is a way for doing that. But, you know, do we just have to have it in doses? Is that the answer? I mean, are we responsible enough to do that? I mean, I know I've talked about this a few times. I mean, I get caught into the trap. I mean, sometimes I'm really good and I leave my phone in the bedroom at night and don't go to it. Other times, sometimes I do that and then somebody will try to call me and it's something urgent and I go in there and I've missed it. And, you know, you're just like, oh, I should have had my phone on me. But then, you know, I don't want to be sitting there scrolling on my phone all night. And yeah.
I reckon it all depends who you're communicating with a bit as well. Like, I got one mate, Zach and Newman. Like, I'm in a Facebook, just a message with him. I don't think I've even got his mobile. But we can write a message, and then he won't write back for 3 days. And I'm just like, I don't care about this. Like, he doesn't care, I don't care. As long as we get back to each other, it's all good. Whereas other people, I'm like, right, I've seen that they've seen this. Why aren't they writing back to me? It's kind of depends on how high maintenance a person you is you're contacting and how urgent it is as well. Like, Zach and I just chilling, just talking about random stuff, and whereas some people you need to get back to them quick because it's a matter of urgency.
Well, it made me think of something that I watched on Netflix the other day. Judd Apatow, the guy who writes all those and makes all those movies like 40-Year-Old Virgin and all those kind of things, he's back did a stand-up gig. He's quite a funny dude. And he's married to Amy Mann, I think, is it? Anyway, the blonde woman in that film who's... So she's in all his films, and so are his kids. So he lives at home with two daughters and his wife. And he was talking about how weird social media is now, that he's like young daughter, she might be 13, and she sits on a phone all day taking selfies and sending it to people. And he's like, what are you doing that for? And she's like, oh, I'm just sending them pictures. And he's like, do you know how weird that is? And she's like, it's not weird at all. And he's like, okay, when I was a kid, say if I was 12 or 13 years old, I took a photo of myself and then sent it in the mail to a friend. And then the friend goes to the mail and opens up a letter and it's a picture of me there. The friend would be like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah, why are you sending me a picture of yourself? But, you know, it's all part of modern life, isn't it? That, you know, if you break it down into everything we do, like you wouldn't be sending, you know, five sentence messages or letters to people all the time, but it's just how we communicate now.
Well, that kid never knows the world without the internet. That's a scary thing. Like, that's normal for her. She's like, yeah, as you said, 12 or 13 or whatever, and it's just like, yeah, you just send pictures to people. It's can you remember when the internet came out?
Yes.
Okay. Were you like,
I remember
logging on?
I was in college and we were creating a website. And we were trying to log on. It was crazy. But we were creating buttons and things that you could click on. And, yeah, that was in grade 11 or, yeah, maybe grade 11 or grade 12, so about 90, 94, I think.
Yeah, right. I can't remember.
We didn't have access to it straight away. That was just at like school on some of the computers you could get onto it. Yeah. And it was pretty much just to send emails and things like that. Like you couldn't do much else.
Yeah, but you'd get like a reply on the email slower than you would like a letter in the post. It just like wasn't efficient at all at the start there.
But I wouldn't have had a phone then either. I don't think I got my first phone until I was maybe 20, 21.
Well, the big move was when smartphones came out. Like I remember being at uni, must have been like 2006, and we all had phones but not smartphones. So we used to go to the computer lab to check like MySpace and Facebook and that. And you'd all log in, and like there'd be four or five of us boys would have like a, I don't know, free period or whatever it was at uni. And so I was like, oh, how many notifications you got? Yeah, I've got four friend requests. I got this, I got that. Like, and because you wouldn't check it until like you might get home that night and get on the home computer. But yeah, you just had the phone. It was all text messages. And it used to be kind of cool, exciting. Like something could happen on Facebook and you wouldn't know about it for 24 hours later.
Yeah, but seriously, how bad's Facebook?
Yeah, well, just that, yeah. Benny made me delete the app the other day when he was around.
Did he?
But I re-downloaded it. Hope he doesn't listen to this because I'm like, yeah. A couple of days later, I'm like, I'm just, but they'll re-download it and I don't do anything on it. Like, I just scroll through random stuff. It's shocking.
He's out and about on the internet now, so he's just giving me some kudos. He's just giving me some kudos on Strava, so he's out and about.
Jeez, he's got a big race coming up this weekend at Parkrun. We're going hard. We're going Brad Croker style, treating Parkrun as like A-grade, like 5K races.
Elite Parkrun.
5K, yeah.
What's Benny going to run on Saturday?
I reckon he'll run 18:51. Trying to get him under. When I first met him at the start of the year, and he just wanted to go under 20 for 5K, and geez, he's come on well.
Yes. Yeah. Are you going to be there with him, or are you?
No, I'm going to Geelong tomorrow. So I'm going to go Geelong tomorrow, so I don't have to drive on race day, just to chill out down there. Just got a little Airbnb, catch up with a mate, run with the boys on Sunday morning after the race, which should be good. Julian's trying to get a big group together, so yeah, looking forward to it.
That should be a great weekend. Yeah, would have loved to have been there.
The meet sounds good. They're doing some good stuff. Hopefully get some good weather. I think it's meant to be all right, and yeah, go from there. I'm not sure how this old it should be good. This 3-lap money thing could be interesting, but yeah.
Don't fall for it.
I know, I'm not falling for it. You've heard it here first. I'm gonna put this show out tonight so people can hear this before Saturday night. But I wanna almost run it similar to I did at State 5K Champs. Like, you know, do some work if we have to run some 72s and keep it
just
3 minute race. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, if it's my turn to take the lead for 3 laps, more than happy to do it. But, I'm not doing anything crazy. And then hopefully I can, as Brad said, like, yeah, if I can go through 9K at 27 dead and then run the last K in 2:55, job done, sub-30 guy, hopefully. But, yeah, track 10Ks are hard. You ran many of them?
Never run one.
It's a bit of a mind thing, I think. You just got to not look at the lap count, I reckon, for about the first 15 laps and just getting a good pack and tick them off.
Oh, I think you'd be fine. I reckon with the buzz down there and knowing that it's a live stream and just how strong you are at the moment, I think you'll be fine. You just need to, just tick it off. Don't even just do like what Stewie and Pat did the other night. Just get through it and then just let it rip.
Then race it. Yeah, I reckon that could be the case. Like I think it will be one in maybe like 29:45, 29:50. So hopefully I'm hanging around with a sniff.
Yeah, I've got no doubt.
It should be good. What's on for Christmas, mate, before I leave you?
Oh, we're here. First Christmas in our new house, which would be great. So I'll be on the pans for Christmas Day. We've got my wife's parents coming down, so they'll stay just down the road. There's a motel just a couple of hundred metres down the road, and we've got her younger sister and fiancé coming over from Melbourne, and they'll be staying with us. So, yeah, it'll be nice. It'll just be just in the one house. We'll be out for a walk on the beach with the dog and then a nice lunch, a vegan lunch, so that'll be good. And then we'll have some wine and some beer and probably watch a movie or two, and then that's it. I think Boxing Day will be pretty relaxed as well because it's just us down here. We'll either go down to the Taste Festival or we'll go down to the Huon. There's like a guy called Willie Smith who has this cool apple cider joint. They have like live music and all that kind of stuff there, so we might go for a drive down there on Boxing Day. But no, it'll be pretty relaxed. I mean, there's not a lot of stress because I haven't got to try to fit in training because I'm not allowed to train, so you know, there won't be that side of it. I can have a couple of drinks and not worry about it too much.
That is a big stress trying to get through. I think that's why I wanted to do that on the training talk on Inside Running the other week, like, how do you manage it? Because I reckon some people can get a bit OCD trying to do all the heavy training and all the social stuff, and you just burn yourself out.
Yeah, I was training the house down this time last year. I was doing so much. Yeah, I think I did maybe 28-30k on the Christmas Eve, and then a couple of runs on Christmas Day as well. And it was just, yeah, so none of that this year.
Yeah, I've been the same. I remember doing, 30K on Christmas morning last year, and then you just cooked for the whole day, and, like, everyone's like, why aren't you giving us anything? You're like, oh, I ran 30K this morning, like, and you just treat the people you love on Christmas Day with no energy because you've already spent it out on the trails.
That'll be nice. So that's one of the positives, I guess, that I can devote myself more to that and just be a little bit more relaxed. You know, I haven't got any races coming up that I'm preparing for or worrying about. I might do some yoga. I think the yoga studio is doing some yoga on the Boxing Day, so I might go in and do that and then sit down and watch the cricket and, you know, just embrace, you know, having a bit of time off. And, yeah, that's the only way I can look at it, because there's no point thinking about, you know, what's been taken away from me. I've just got to think about the positive stuff. And if I get all this sorted, then, you know, I'm going to come back a much better runner, because I've been running around with a broken back and all kinds of funky stuff going on for who God knows how long now. So
yeah, and still around 2 PBs, didn't you?
3 PBs.
3 PBs. What, 5K, 10K, half marathon?
Yep.
How's that? The highs and lows of 2017 for you.
Yeah, what a mess.
Well, yeah, look at those scans. When you sent it through to me in a text message, I was like, whoa, this isn't just like one stressy. That's huge. And then you chuck that in with 3 PBs. what can you do when you're healthy?
Yeah. I mean, that Gold Coast one, I don't know. Yeah, looking back, I don't know how I did that.
21K on the road.
That's, yeah, hard. I thought it hurt a bit.
Oh, hard stuff.
No wonder I can walk for a week.
Yeah, that's it. Hey, can you leave the listeners with something? What other books you read and podcasts you listen to? Docos. What was that doco you mentioned before? Is it worth checking out?
Which one?
The comedian, Jade.
Oh, Judd Apatow. Yeah, that's not too bad. That's not too bad. Yeah, if you want something a bit lighter, yeah, Judd Apatow, he's pretty good. Main podcast, Lance Armstrong's loving it.
I haven't got onto it yet. I heard him on Rich Roll, and then I was meaning to check his one out. Trials, is it called Trials?
Stages. No, Stages is his one that he does for the tour. The Forward is his own podcast.
That's right. Yeah.
Great listening, man. Like, he's so open and honest. Like, he's arrogant, but, you know, he's so honest now. And, you know, he talks about the shit that he's done, and he talks so openly and honestly about it now. And he owns up for all his mistakes and everything. And he's just he gets some interesting people on, and he's just so candid and natural and relaxed. I really enjoy it. Like, it's just just something that I don't have to, like, there's a lot of other intense podcasts that I listen to, but he's one I just love having on when I'm cooking and things like that. And yeah, so yeah,
cool. And he has different guests every time as well. Like, it's,
yeah, different guests every week.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, I'm just flicking through now. It looks good.
He's really good. So yeah, check that out. Be kind to yourself, everybody, I guess, at Christmas. Don't put too much pressure on. Spend it with your family. And like, I mean, I never did take my running for granted, but yeah, I guess just enjoy it. If you're out there running, just enjoy the moment. Enjoying being fit and healthy. And for those of us who are all injured, just understand that you'll get through it, and there'll be other things you can do as well, and just embrace those. So,
yeah, I think you've said that really well, because I think sometimes we take things for granted, and when we're hitting 8 out of 10 training sessions, we want to be hitting 9 or 10 out of 10 training sessions. And you got to remember that there's people out there who are on the couch or in recovery wishing they were just out there jogging.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Beautiful, mate. Let people know your handles again. We do it every time, but some people may be tuning in for the first time with Andy Allison.
Yeah, okay, cool. At the Edge Runner on Instagram. So I post more stories than actual photos. So if you want to see what I'm up to, that's a good one there. won't be seeing much on Strava unless you like yoga and really slow bike rides, but you can check me out, Andy Allison, on Strava. And yeah, if you want to hit me up on Messenger, heaps of people do that, which I really love. That's, I love being able to give back a little bit and talk to people. So that's just Andy Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N. So yeah, if you want to talk about something, yeah, happy to answer messages in Messenger as well.
Full of wisdom, this guy. Get onto him. Thanks for coming on, mate. It's I wasn't sure if you would have been keen. I was just like, you know, it's all good when things are going good with people and everyone's happy to talk about life when, you know, you're ticking the boxes and going well. But yeah, I think it was important to share the good and the bad and the highs and the lows throughout the year, and I reckon we've done a pretty good job of that in the three podcasts we've done this year.
Absolutely, we've had some good and we've had some bad, but that's reality, isn't it? We're not always up, you know.
That's what that book talks about. Like, you got to have struggle. You got to have things like not going well for yourself so you can learn and go back and put things into perspective and try harder.
Yeah, far out. I mean, if I get through this, I'm just going to really embrace being able to run again if I can get back next year. But, you know, I'll keep you posted. I'll know more in about a month's time.
They were talking about that. I don't know who was talking about it. I read it somewhere, but, you know, they always have that debate about should we give kids participation medals or, like, trophies for coming last and all those kind of things. And it's just, yeah it's a big one. And, yeah, you see it in schools all the time. Like, I don't know. Like, don't give the kids stuff if they're not good at it, because, yeah, you want them to struggle and want them to find it difficult so they go hard and work at it and come back and then get the trophy they deserve.
That's right, yep.
I'm with you. Thanks, Andy. Done it again.
Pleasure, mate. Good luck Saturday. Really, really looking forward to seeing a positive result from you. I'm sure you'll run well, and good luck to the Big Moose as well.
The Big Moose, yeah. He's playing it down. I reckon he's better shape than what he's letting people know of. His Strava's impressive.
100%.
He's done a lot 100%. He's done a lot of circle work, which makes me worried. Like, he has been good on the track.
He has been smashing the track, hasn't he?
On the track. And the track's hard. Like, I hate the track. I've got to get on there more. I've got to get soccer players off there so I can actually get on there. Yeah. I went there today and the guy was mowing it. I'm like, far out. It's like 11 o'clock on a Thursday. I thought I was hitting this. I'm but he did get off though. I warmed up and come back and he just gave me a wave.
Tell me who you were.
Yeah, I don't know what he was thinking. Like, gave me a wave, and so like half the oval was mowed. So like you hit the 100-meter line and then it wasn't mowed. It was like doing cross country. It was a good preparation for the real track on Saturday night.
Yeah, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it should be good. Hopefully the stream's good. I think it will be. They've been doing a good job, those guys.
Yeah, no, it should be good. Yep.
Righto, mate. Good talking to you again. Have a good Christmas.
Yeah, you too, mate. All the best.
See you afterwards. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Brady. See ya.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.